This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Welcome to Keeping the Faith. We're talking today by telephone live with a Lutheran pastor who's been spending the last year and a half on the West Bank in Palestine, Pastor John Sutherland. John, what's our connection like today?
Pretty good. I can hear you loud and clear.
Oh, and you're coming through very nicely. Well, isn't modern technology wonderful? Well, we're fortunate today. We get to talk for a whole hour with someone who's had now a year and a half of experience working in a Lutheran boys' home in Bet Jala, which is right next to Bethlehem, which is 6 or 7 miles from Jerusalem. So, John, tell us what the weather's like there.
Well, I think summer is returning, finally. In fact, we got a nice shower of rain. It's midnight here now, and about a half an hour ago it started to rain, which is, in this dry climate, a great blessing to us all.
But you had a surprise, what, just a month ago with very unusual snow.
Yes, we did. We had some major snowstorms, which took everybody by surprise.
And how does that that warm climate place deal with snow?
Not very well. For one thing, we're extremely hilly in our city, and so even a light covering of snow makes the streets almost impassable.
And I suppose there's none of the equipment and the salt and the things to help make it safer.
No, there's not as much as a snow shovel around our entire church, so we're busy with brooms and carrying on like that.
Well, we're glad you got through it, just so you'll feel better there with spring starting. We've had bad snowstorms in the Midwest, not here in Illinois and Indiana, but our neighboring states of Ohio and Pennsylvania have had up to 20 inches in the last 24 hours, so
I won't complain about snow here.
I mention that partly to say that for those who might have been hoping after this program to be heading over to the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center to see the exhibit there that was to start tonight at 6 o'clock on the history of Muslims in America, that has had to be postponed because the exhibit was being brought through the states of Pennsylvania and Ohio, and unfortunately there was a traffic accident involving the vehicle that was bringing the exhibit, and the driver was not seriously injured but was delayed, so that will not start today. Please check with the mosque, that's CIMIC, Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center, to find out when that will open. And it will be open probably later in the week, probably Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, but do check with the mosque. John, one of the great treats of talking with you in Palestine is you can give us some insight, perhaps, into things that we see in the news. As many listeners know, I'm the director of the local campus YMCA here at the University of Illinois, and the Y in Gaza was bombed in just a couple weeks ago, February 15th, and the Y there in Gaza, part of one of the Palestinian territories, of course, had been serving Christians there, Muslims there, and any Jews that were there, although there were very few of those at this time. I wonder if you can give us anything you've heard there about the situation in Gaza.
Well, the situation in the Gaza Strip is extremely desperate. There's a lot of violence, internal violence among the various factions of the Arab population, and violence then that is reaching out against the neighboring Jewish communities out on the other side of the border from Gaza.
So there still are some rockets that are going from Gaza into the Jewish territories.
Last I heard, they have not been able to stop that. And this, of course, brings the Israeli army down hard on, which is quite natural, on the militants to stop the firing of rockets across the border.
But the lockdown of Gaza by the Israeli military has made life there just horrible, hasn't it?
Yes, they have cut off water and electricity and food and things, and it's from the reports we've heard. I have not been there. I don't think it's possible to go there, but the reports say that it's great. It's very desperate there for the people.
Now let's give listeners a little picture of where you are in relation to Gaza, for example. The whole country of Israel is not very large. People often say, well, it's the size of New Jersey, but many people don't know how small New Jersey is. It's really a very narrow country.
Right. If you take the state of Illinois and slice it from north to south down the middle, the total Israel, including the Palestinian territories, is about one of those halves.
And when you talk about that that small area, Gaza is separated from the west of the rest of the Palestinian territories by what, 100 miles?
I don't think it's even that far. I think it's, I better not say for sure, but I think I'm thinking maybe around 50 miles or
so. But there's no sort of safe passage for Palestinians to go from Gaza to the rest of the West Bank.
They're cut off from each other militarily and physically, just as they are practically politically.
Yes.
Governed by opposing factions of the Palestinian, what was once the Palestinian Authority.
Right. And where you are in Beit Jala, right next, as I was saying, to Bethlehem, if you want to get to Jerusalem, 7 miles away, what's it like?
Well, it's easy for me. It's easy for somebody with an American or a foreign passport. I simply step outside on the main street that runs by my home, and I can flag down the bus, and in about half an hour, I'm in Jerusalem.
But you have to go through a checkpoint or more than one?
There's one checkpoint where we stop regularly, and we are asked to show our passports or our ID cards, whatever it is we're carrying.
And if one is not, if one doesn't have a U.S. passport or another country, what's
the
local? Like?
The local people from the West Bank, the people who live here in Beit Jala, are not permitted to go to Jerusalem. They are not permitted to ride that bus without special application. They can apply in advance if they have some reason to go and get papers from the Israeli government giving them permission to go for a certain day, and then they show that paper when they come to the checkpoint. They do not have that paper. They're taken off the bus and sent back. Almost, I would say, half the times I go, I see somebody who's yanked off the bus and not allowed to come into the city of Jerusalem.
Yes. Now, for tourists who have probably landed in Tel Aviv, come to Jerusalem by van or bus, if they want to come to, say, see Bethlehem, which is in the Palestinian territory and also needing to go through a checkpoint, they can do that fairly easily?
Yes, the tour buses are not hindered very, very seriously. There's a minor checkpoint. Well, I should say it's a major checkpoint, but the tourist buses are not detained there for any length of time.
Okay.
And they are allowed to come through the checkpoint and to visit Bethlehem.
Now, we've wanted to talk today particularly about the situation for Christians, Arab Christians, in Palestine, in the Palestinian territories. You've been there a year and a half working in one of the Christian churches, a Lutheran church. Tell us a little bit about that experience.
Well, I came as a volunteer in 2006 to, at the request of the local pastor. This is congregation is one of six Lutheran churches in the Middle East, and I am living on the campus of the church, several buildings nearby each other, and the building I live in happens to be a boarding home for schoolboys. So that wasn't necessarily going to be part of my assignment when I first came. In fact, I didn't know I was going to be living here. When I arrived, I found out that I am and that it is. So So this has become a big part of my life, simply living with Arab young people and their supervisors. They have three men who live here with them, who sleep with them, and there are the staff of cooks and housekeepers and so forth who take care of them. And I just happen to be, I'm sort of like a visitor here, but a long-term visitor. Yes. I'm also working at the congregation that runs this place, and I'm I preach in the church on occasion, and I am teaching music lessons, piano and organ, and I'm helping some of the students with their English lessons.
And how many Christians, well, I guess I'm curious is about roughly, of course, the Christians in the Arab community there in Palestine are a minority. How long have they been there, and have they been there since the time of Jesus?
Yes, the Christian people in this, what we call the Holy Land, trace their history way back to the first century, to the time of the apostles, and to the day of Pentecost and so forth, and they feel that they are part of the community that was begun then and that has lived on this land ever since. And they have never, well, in recent history, have not been the majority. Since the rise of Islam, the Muslim faith has been the dominant religion in this Arab community. Since the establishment of Israel, of course, the rise of the Jewish population has become very prominent in Israel. I'm stumbling over these words because the politics is so complex, and
yes.
Who owns what,
yes.
And who lives and controls which part of the land is pretty confusing.
It is.
And it can be misunderstood, and I hope that if people are having questions, they can ask them, and I can clear up some of it. The town of Beit Jala, where I live, which is a town of about 20,000 people, is approximately 80% Christian. It's one of the few, I think there are only three or four cities in the West Bank that have a majority of Christians. They're Arab Christians, and they all speak Arabic. They pray to God as Allah, and but they, as I say, they are Christians from ancient times, and they represent several branches of the Christian community. Most predominant is the Greek Orthodox, and there's also Roman Catholic, and there's Anglican, and there's Lutheran, and some other evangelical groups, and not to mention Eastern Orthodox churches.
Now, John, when you talk about that particular town of 20,000 being 80% Christian, the other 20% would be Muslim. What
yes.
is the relationship between the Muslims and the Christians in your town?
It's very cordial and respectful. Only the most radical fringes, as always, have any problem with living side by side with believers of other faiths. The boys in our boarding home are about evenly divided between Christians and Muslims, and there's so little problem I can hardly tell. Some of them, I forget which they are because they live and work together all the time. So it's very peaceful in this town. In fact, someone was commenting to me yesterday, one of the kids, that it's so peaceful here that it's boring living in Beit Jala.
Well, let me throw the phone lines open to people who might have questions. You encourage that.
Oh, yes.
And the numbers to ask Pastor John Sutherland a question about his experience on the West Bank of Israel and Palestine in Champaign-Urbana. The number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Elsewhere, you may call us toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. And I know we do have listeners who listen to this program on the internet. In fact, some outside this country, like Pastor John does occasionally, I know.
Right.
It's nice via computer to be able to hear WILL anywhere in the world. However, we can only take the 1-800 calls from within the continental U.S. I'm sorry to say that number again, 1-800-222-9455. We do have a caller on line number one. Yes, you're on the air.
Hi. thank you for this. About 35 years ago, 1973-74, I spent a year at the Ecumenical Institute in Tontour.
Yes.
Right across the valley from you there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious about the changes, both political and, I guess, geographic, that from your brief description so far must have occurred since then. We were there during the October Yom Kippur War and also during the spring of 1974, the Minor Intifada that came up then. But at the time, the main road from Jerusalem to Bethlehem and to Beit Jala was wide open. There was no barrier of any kind. There were no checkpoints. There was no restriction on Palestinians moving from either of those cities into Jerusalem and back. I went to school at the, I was in high school, I went to the Anglican Church International School in downtown Jerusalem, and we would catch either an Arab bus or an Israeli bus, depending on what came along first. From what you're saying, it doesn't sound like it's like that anymore.
It certainly is not. In fact, on that road that you mentioned, it goes by Rachel's Tomb. That's the usual identification.
Right, exactly.
There is a major checkpoint, which all travelers along that road must stop and show papers and be examined and go through turnstiles and metal detectors and so forth.
Now, is there any part of the wall they've been talking about in
yes.
the area?
Yes, this checkpoint is the way to get through that wall.
Oh, no kidding.
It's a 30-foot high wall of concrete that is being built around the city of Bethlehem and is enclosing, slowly but surely, enclosing Beit Jala as well.
And is Tontur, which is closer to Jerusalem, is that on the other side of the wall?
It's on the Jerusalem side, yes.
Wow. I'm almost afraid to go back and visit again.
Well, it's you don't need to be afraid because of any physical danger, but you have to sort of guard your emotions.
Yeah, I'm more afraid just it's going to look different from the way it used to. So,
and all these institutions, like Tantur, for instance, are struggling for clientele now because people feel like you do, that who wants to go there when there's this kind of tension and this kind of strife going on.
Well, that's really a shame.
The tourist industry and the educational industry and everything else is... And every possible industry you can think of on both sides of the wall are suffering greatly.
I bet. What about the actual control of political control and military control of the territories once you get inside the wall? When I was there 35 years ago, the Israelis pretty much ran everything. The army was everywhere. Is the army still present on the far side of the wall?
Yes, they are. They come and go. We have them right in our town. You can count on seeing them if you cross at certain intersections and so forth. And they their trucks and we're talking about the Israeli troops at this point.
Right.
There really is no Palestinian army.
I see. Okay. And so how about traveling from say where you are to I don't know the Dead Sea or Hebron or somewhere? Is that easy to do?
If you go by a bus that the citizens take, then you have to stop it and be checked at several points. If I want to go to the Dead Sea, I can call a taxi, and we can go through Jerusalem and through on the better highways and get there with minimal trouble.
I see. Well, thank you.
Okay.
I was just curious about those changes. So
I would encourage you to come and have another look.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh. You're welcome.
Thank you for the call. And, John, you might say a word or two, since you were kind enough to host my wife and myself last summer in June when we stayed for a week in Beit Jala and did travel throughout Palestine and Israel and had wonderful experiences. Tell people about the difference between some of the roads and other roads now.
Well, in some places there are rather nice, wide, smooth, efficient highways. And some of these roads are, in fact, there's a road that cuts right through Beit Jala that the local people are not permitted to travel on. It's restricted so that people who are commuting from Jerusalem to the settlements south of Beit Jala, Hebron, Ephrat, and many, many of the settlements, so that they can travel freely and not have to be bogged down by going through Arab towns.
And, of course, one of the concerns for those, for the Israelis who are traveling from the settlements back to Jerusalem, for example, is safety. And there is some reason for their concern. One of the headlines in the paper just today was, talks are still on despite attack in Jerusalem. And the Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas is calling for Israel not to abandon the peace efforts in spite of the recent attack that killed of the seminary students. I think there were
eight
Israeli students.
This was a dreadful attack. I think all sides agree in this particular case that it was one fanatical person who was berserk and who raged into a school and did some shooting. We know about that from the United States.
Yes, here in Illinois, with Northern Illinois, within the last month.
So, so this kind of thing happens wherever the doors are open, I guess, and I don't think anyone is seeing it as more than an individual case, a tragedy. And it's, I don't know, happily or tragically, it's the first time there's been an event like this, and I think they said 4 years.
Yes. And let me be quick to report that in our 2 weeks in Israel, 1 week in Beit Jala, staying there at the guest home that the Lutheran boarding school does have for visitors from Europe and South America and the East and America, we had a wonderful experience, never saw any violence, felt very, very safe when we were traveling in the Palestinian territories as well as in the Israeli other portions of Israel. So I will join you in encouraging people to visit the Holy Land. It is the Holy Land for, of course, three major monotheistic faiths, and it's certainly worth seeing.
And I should underscore, I think, the notion that the vast majority of people of all religions and languages and political views are moderates and are seeking a peaceful resolution to the many problems that face this area, and that it's all too often it's the fanatics on every side that make compromise impossible and any kind of settlement, a peaceful settlement, to seem so hopeless.
So difficult, yes. I might say that the week we spent in Jerusalem, we stayed at the International YMCA there, which has been there for 100 years, a beautiful building, a very nice hotel and restaurant there, very close to the old city. We had a wonderful, wonderful week there after our week in Beit Jala, and it was a fine place to stay, and that Y has been open to Christians and Jews and Muslims for all of its 100 years. In fact, has as part of its charter that one-third of its board is to be representing each of the three faiths. So there are institutions like that International Y in Jerusalem, and like the YMCA in East Jerusalem, and the Y that was in Gaza, which we hope will be rebuilt and able to open again, which have been trying to work steadily for better understanding and peace.
I'll have to tell you that the YMCA in East Jerusalem has been converted into a hotel.
Has it now?
A privately owned hotel.
I knew it had was struggling, and I hadn't heard that finally. We have another caller on line one. Go ahead, please. Line number one with Pastor John Sutherland.
Oh, hi, Pastor John. Hi from Brian Paul. I just
yes.
Regarding encouraging tourism, and could you tell us about the hotel that you have there, that you have something to do with?
Yeah. Our church has a small guest house, a very nice one, I might add, I think they have about 26 rooms, and a fine restaurant attached to it, and we are very and moderate prices, and in a very peaceful community. It's I can't encourage people too much to take a look at it and to come and visit us.
It has all the modern conveniences, and they certainly do feed you well.
Well, how about an organ concert, too? Can you throw that in?
Well, that could be done. I've given one organ recital since I've been here, and I'd be delighted if someone was interested in listening to it.
Thanks a lot, John.
Appreciate the call. Let me give the numbers again, 333-9455 for Champaign-Urbana area callers. Elsewhere, 1-800-222-9455. John, let's talk a little bit about some of the things that happen in your church. We want to talk about the Christian experience with the Arabs there, and you had recently had some ordinations, I understand.
Yes, last Sunday, March the 2nd, two young men, two Palestinian men, were ordained as Lutheran pastors. And this was a major event for us because, as I say, there are only six churches. So we're delighted to have this addition to the pastoral staff in this area. Both of them have connections to Beit Jala. One of them grew up here, and the other one was worked in our boarding home some years ago, and they are working in the two towns on that flank Bethlehem on either side, one on Beit Jala and one at Beit Sahur on the other side of Bethlehem. So service was held in the large Lutheran church in Jerusalem, which, on the basis of what we've said, you can imagine, was not an easy thing to do because most of the people from Beit Jala and Bethlehem and Beit Sahur were cannot automatically go to Jerusalem. So they had to apply, the churches had to apply for permission, and some got permission and some didn't. Our church choir received permission to go and to supply some music for the service, and one of the other church choirs that was also planning to do did not get permission, and so they were not able to come. The bishop, the Lutheran bishop, who lives in Jerusalem, presided over the service.
Tell us about what that church, the Lutheran church in Jerusalem, looks like and where it's located.
Well, it's located about a half a block away from the Church of the Holy Sepulchre.
So it's in the Old City.
It's in the Old City, and that the Holy Sepulchre Church is the place built on over the spot where Jesus was crucified and where he was buried, and, of course, from which he rose from the dead on Easter Sunday. And the Lutheran Church is just, like as I say, half a block away from that. Very delighted to have that special situation for them. And it's a large Romanesque-style church. It was built, I think, in 1898 by the Germans, who were the Germans were really the founders of the Lutheran tradition in the Holy Land. And I know our local church here was founded by Lutheran missionaries who came from Germany in the 19th century. And the church in Jerusalem is a large church, as you might expect. If there is a Lutheran cathedral around here, that would be it. And it's quite famous for its bell tower, which is the best place to do sightseeing in the Old City, the best high elevation viewpoint in the Old City of Jerusalem.
John, talk a little bit about the relationship between the various types of Christians in the Holy Land, in the Arab Christians and others. You mentioned there are Catholics, Anglicans, Evangelical Protestants, the Orthodox, various branches of Orthodoxy, Eastern Orthodoxy,
right.
Russian Orthodoxy, Greek Orthodoxy, Lutheran, other mainline Protestants perhaps. How do they all get along?
They get along rather well. I was just reading a book called Palestinian Christians, written by the local people here a couple of years ago, and they are delighted and thankful that the church leaders from all of these Christian denominations meet together on a regular basis and that are quite productive. Back in the year 2000, which was, as you know, the turn of the millennium, this was a very important time in the Holy Land, especially for Bethlehem, where the events of the second millennium counted from. And all the churches cooperated in producing many, many programs, as well as each church having its own special events as well. Now, there are churches that we are not terribly familiar with in the United States, like the Armenian Orthodox Church is a very important denomination here in Jerusalem in the Holy Land. And besides that, there are Egyptian Orthodox and Ethiopian Orthodox and Assyrian Orthodox churches. And I'm probably forgetting some of them, but there are many kinds of Christians here. And at the ordination service that we spoke of a moment ago, many of the representatives from those churches were with us, as they have been on other occasions, the Week of Prayer for Christian Unity, in the fall, when the Lutherans celebrate the Festival of the Reformation, ecumenical visitors come and are given special honors and so forth as well. And in turn, our representatives attend services, special events in the other cathedrals and churches in the area.
We're about halfway through our program, and let me thank our guest, Pastor John Sutherland, for being up at midnight, now half past midnight in Palestinian time. In order to be with us live here on the radio, let me repeat the phone numbers. If you'd like to talk to Pastor John, ask questions about Israel, Palestine, 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana. Elsewhere, if it's long distance, 1-800-222-9455. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. Let me give a special thanks to Don Nolan. Professor Nolan has filled in for me in the last couple of weeks when I was having some medical issues, and I'm still not quite back to par, but I can sit at least and talk for an hour, so I'm glad I could do this interview myself, having had a wonderful experience with my wife and my visit to the Holy Land last summer. Coming up on at the University of Y, which provides support for these Keeping the Faith programs. This week, we will not have a Friday forum because spring break starts the next day. And, of course, students and faculty are well out the door on Friday noon. So we will not have a Friday forum either this Friday or the following. But there will be a Know Your University program this Tuesday. That's March 11 at the University Y. And we're very happy to be co-sponsoring this with the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. Unfortunately, the modern dance company Diavolo has had to have a change of schedule. They will not be represented. But we're delighted that some of the performers of the Shakespeare series are going to be with us. So those of you who love literature, who love Shakespeare, will have a real treat. It's a free program this noon at the University Y, 1001 South Wright Street, right across from Lincoln Hall. Easily accessible by bus. We have many buses that go right by, and you can get off at the University Library, walk half a block to the Y, and you're there easily. Or you can, in spite of the construction, there still are a few parking spaces around. So if you need to drive, you can do that too. That's this Tuesday, Shakespeare at the Y. Coming up on Keeping the Faith in the weeks ahead, I'm happy to have one of the University Y very active student groups represented by Mike Polito and others, Red Bison, that does some very interesting restoration and preservation of Illinois prairies. Less than 1% of the original prairie land is still around this state. And Red Bison, there's a bunch of volunteer students at the university working through this Y program helping to preserve and restore prairies. The Y itself has examples of that on both our east and north side of the building. You can see some of the original plants that grew in this region if you're on the campus. Coming up in April, we have several interesting programs. Josh Slocum, the National Director of the Funeral Consumers Association, will be our guest on April 13, April 20. Norman Hubbard from the Navigators on campus will be our guest. April 27th, we'll be talking with Rabbi Norman Klein and Elihu Smith from the Prairie Zen Center about the Tolstoy Big Read Project, which will be kicking off here in March. Everybody's going to be reading Tolstoy's The Death of Ivan Illich. Now, I pronounced that the American way, but I actually read the book and saw how it was supposed to be pronounced yesterday, and it's apparently Ivan Tolstoy, or maybe that's closer, and it's The Death of Ivan Illich. But however you pronounce it, it's a wonderful, very short novel dealing with some very important themes about life and death. So those are some things coming up here on Keeping the Faith in the weeks ahead. Let's get back to our guest, Pastor John Sutherland, who spent a year and a half now as a volunteer helping out at a Lutheran church in Bet Jala on the West Bank in Israel, Palestinian territories. We have another caller waiting on line number one. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you, and I'd like to say hi to John. It's good to hear his voice. I'm calling, wanting to know from John's perspective what ways he feels are most effective for listeners here to encourage the peace process in Israel. And I'll get off the phone.
Thanks for the question.
Well, I think I have said many times that I think the best thing to do is to come and see. But I understand from your question that you're talking about people who are staying at home. And I think to try to broaden the information base that you receive. No one who lives here is happy with the way the American news media report the news from the Middle East as far as being fair and complete. So I would encourage listening or watching other networks if you can possibly reach them, some from the Middle East, and at least some from maybe the BBC or other.
Which can be easily heard here on NPR.
Yes, it can. which at least are from a broader international perspective. So, I would say the same for literature, to try to find literature that is written, published by authors and from different perspectives.
John, if I could follow up on that listener's question, what would you say are some of the biggest misperceptions as you remember what people were thinking and saying when you were in this country before you'd had this personal experience there?
Well, we're still finding that many, many people don't even realize that there are Christians living as an important sector of the Palestinian society, that the Christians here are basically Arab people and have been here for centuries and are committed, I'm pleased to say, are committed to peaceful resolutions of the issues that rise in the area. So I would say encourage the various churches in the United States to maintain and build up contacts with corresponding Christian groups in the Holy Land is another way that that the Christian community in the United States can promote peace in the Middle East. And the same, you know, they will happily take encouragement and support from Christians or non-Christians. So I can't really advise the Muslim community because I don't know what to say to them.
But you said earlier that just as the majority of the Christians have a moderate view politically, many of the Muslims you've met, Arab Muslims in that area of the world, are also moderate.
Oh, yes. So if they're what I'm hesitating a little because of my ignorance, I guess. If there are similar avenues that Muslim communities in the United States can support, their corresponding people in the Middle East in moderation, in peace, in diplomacy, and so forth, please, please, it's very important to do so.
And, of course, Jewish voices often that are moderate are not highlighted in American media.
That's right.
Israeli voices.
Yeah, moderate voices of any kind seem to be lost in the shuffle of the loud, strident, radical voices that we hear from all sides.
Let's talk about some of the real difficulties. One of the problems that I know occurred after our visit there last June was together we visited a YMCA, a beautiful spot on Lake Galilee that the
Yes.
Y has had for many years called
Peniel
on the Sea, on the Sea of Galilee. It's a wonderful retreat center, a wonderful chapel is there, a beautiful view of Lake Sea of Galilee. And you had hoped that some of the boys from your boarding home could take a camping trip there. There are camp spots for people to come and camp, as well as places, small hotel to stay in. And you worked hard to get that to happen. The Y was happy to host you. But tell us about the difficulties.
We were setting up this trip. We had an invitation from the director, and he was going to charge us next to nothing to come there and stay. Which was good news. We did not, and we had begun to make plans, chartering a bus and so forth to take us, and we unfortunately did not receive the permission we needed to cross the border into Israel itself. So because these boys are Palestinians, they were not permitted to go.
So
we had the last minute, we waited and waited to see if we would get this permission. And we were to go Sunday, and on Saturday it had not come. So our hope was we're lost, and we had to call them and say we're not coming.
So Israeli authorities, naturally being afraid of violence and afraid of difficulties, because there have been in the past, sometimes perhaps overreact and are restrictive of groups which are very peaceful and really quite safe.
Right. There was no explanation. I mean, that's true. There was no explanation in this particular case. So we can only guess, I suppose, at the reasons why we did not receive the permission. But we didn't, and which didn't surprise people. They're used to it. It surprised me because it was my first experience with that kind of impediment. But
Now, there's also been difficulty about some money that was raised for a van to make transportation of these young men more easy. Can you tell us about some of those difficulties?
Yes. This is, I think, a different type of difficulty. We, thanks to the generosity of many people in the United States, had raised money to purchase a van that we need to transport our children back and forth to school and trips and so forth. And the plan was that we would be able to purchase this van and that there would be no import fee because we are a nonprofit, a church organization. We received the money we needed for the price of the van, but then we also received a letter from the government saying we've decided not to waive these import fees anymore, so it would more than double the price of the van.
Mm.
So puts us in a very awkward position of having received this gift of money and, in a sense, not being able to use it right now and not sure what the future is going to. They said our car dealer said he would argue with the government for us, on our behalf, but we're still waiting to hear some better news.
So
we don't have the van. The money is in the bank here. The money was transferred from the United States to our bank, a local bank, and it's there, safe and sound, but it the dollar isn't getting any more valuable, as we all know, either.
And the steps to get through the bureaucracy, I know, are very difficult. So it's very frustrating, I'm sure.
It is. It's so disappointing for people who get their hopes up and then discover, no, we can't do this, we can't do that, we can't go places. It's the kind of frustrations that affect our people every day here. I think the primary one is that they cannot travel very far. They feel like they're being penned in and that their movement is so restricted that there's nothing to do anymore.
As a result, many of the Palestinians are leaving the country if they can, right?
Yes. They are looking for ways to emigrate, which
is also not easy.
it's not easy for anyone to leave their home.
Yes.
And especially when they realize that it seems like a contest of who's going to get this land in the end. And so they hate to give up on that.
Sure.
On their own rights, what they feel are their own property rights and so forth.
We have another caller, this time on our toll-free line. Line 4, you're on the air with our guest, Pastor John Sutherland.
Greetings from Yankton, South Dakota, Pastor John from
Georgia. Oh, thank you.
Just wanted to let you know that the marriage of my husband and I 36 years ago has been going well. That you officiated that.
Oh, how wonderful.
John's my cousin. Thank you for addressing the van issue. It was a question I had as to what we could do. Are there no local dealers that you can just purchase a van from?
Well, we did go to a local dealer, but they have to import the cars.
I see.
Because our cars, our new cars, come only from the West.
Okay.
And we would, if we bought a car that was for sale locally, we would be getting, unfortunately, as they said, a pile of junk, and we don't really want that.
Also, I have a question about: is the trip to, I believe, a camp in New York still pending?
We are hoping to travel this in New England.
New England.
Yes, and. We are making plans, sponsored by some Lutherans in the New England Synod. So, again, we are gathering passports and seeking permission to get permission to go to Jerusalem to interview at the U.S. consulate to get our visas.
Mm-hmm.
What will be a major chore too.
Mm-hmm.
So, I told them we have to start early on this because it'll be a big process.
Well, thank you for staying up late, and I enjoy hearing about your program here.
Well, thank you for calling.
Goodbye.
Mm-hmm. We're down to our last 10 minutes or so, but we can squeak in another phone call or two. Let me give the numbers again, 1-800-222-9455. If you're like our last caller listening on the Internet, do use that number. In Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We'll get several local lines, so do give us a call. John, what are your plans for the spring?
Well, I'm getting some guests to come and visit. One of my friends is coming to visit for Easter, which will be in a few days that he's coming. We'll be here for Palm Sunday and Easter Sunday.
What will happen in your church on those high holidays?
Well, as I can recall from last year, the children show up on Palm Sunday with palm leaves, and as I recall, they get lots of candy and stuff at the end of the church service, and so that's a very happy day. I should say that Easter will be different this year in one major way, because last year the Easter according to the Orthodox calendar was the same day as the Easter according to the Western Church calendar. Well, this year, they are separated by, I think, 5 weeks.
Wow.
So, and since the Orthodox calendar predominates here, I'm not sure if the Easter festivities in the communities will be as big as they were last year for us. I haven't heard yet about For instance, the bringing of the holy fire from the Jerusalem church to Beit Jala will probably take place only on the Orthodox Easter Saturday instead of will not take place on the Saturday before Easter according to the Western Church calendar. But our church, our individual church, will celebrate all the days that Holy Week and with a special Easter service and so forth.
And I know music is important in Lutheran churches around the world, and you're helping with the music there. Do you have anything special in mind?
Well, our choir is planning a special piece that they want to perform that's a combination of Latin and Greek and Arab verses in one Easter song that they've started working on. So I think we'll be singing that. And we'll probably have some special instruments. Many of the children in the area are learning to play instruments, string and wind instruments. And if we can get them organized well enough, they will perform with the choir.
What are the special treats in terms of food around the holidays there in the Holy Land?
Well, the festival dinner for very special days is called mensef, and it is lamb, roasted lamb, on top of a large pile of baked rice, and then there's always bread underneath at the bottom of the dish, and then a special kind of yellow yogurt sauce is made to pour over it. And this is, as far as I can tell, this is the most important and the most
traditional
and celebrative meal that they have.
We had some wonderful food when my wife and I were traveling with you around the various spots. We had some real treats and some quite surprises. The Middle
Right.
Eastern food we love, but there are some restaurants there that have, in fact, close to you in Bethlehem, that have surprising menus.
Right. There are places where you can get pizza and you can get hamburgers and so forth. There's even a fast food hamburger shop in Bethlehem.
Well, I wasn't thinking of those so much, but we did have some wonderful meals. We have another caller on line number 4, the toll-free line. You're on the air.
Hi, Pastor John. This is Charles in Albuquerque.
Oh, hello. How are you?
Recalling, I was interested in what you were just talking about, some of the traditions and celebrations you have coming up for Easter, and recalling that you actually baptized me on the Easter Vigil service some 15-odd years ago. Are there similar celebrations planned there in Beit Jala?
Last year, I haven't heard yet. I don't get in on it until I actually see it happen. Last year, we did not have an Easter Vigil.
Okay.
The big celebration took place on Saturday afternoon, in which the whole town gathered in the city square, and they brought as I mentioned a moment ago, the holy fire from the Resurrection Church in Jerusalem, and they brought it on a car through into Beit Jala. They sent the fire from the Church of the Resurrection comes to Bethlehem and then to all the churches in the area. And people gathered around this car, and they all lit their candles and lanterns and so forth at that time. That was sort of like an Easter vigil. Candle lighting took place on Saturday afternoon, however. But as I said, I think this year we'll have to wait with that until the Orthodox Easter.
I see. Oh, it's fascinating to keep up with your travels and your experiences over there, and we wish you well. And fascinated by your ministry over there.
Thank you. I'm glad to hear it, and I wish you well as well.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call, Pastor John. Tell us a little bit about your own history. Clearly, you have served Lutheran churches throughout this country, and some of those folks you've kept in touch with and are getting your newsletter from Beit Jala, the Beit Jala Journal. Tell us quickly how others might get on your email journal list. How may they subscribe? It's free. Well, it's free, I know.
Right. When I came here, I decided I would send a short newsletter out, and decided to do it 2 times a month. And I'm happy to send it to anyone that wants to take time to read it. And if you just write to me at john.setterland@gmail.com, I can include you on the next mailing list. I'd be happy to do that.
And spell Setterland for us.
S as in Sam, E-T-T-E-R-L-U-N-D.
Setterland, S-E-T-T-E-R-L-U-N-D, at gmail.com. And that's just the letter G and then mail.com, correct?
Correct.
Great. And tell us where you, I know many people here in Champaign-Urbana know you were the Lutheran campus pastor at St. Andrew's Church, director of the Lutheran campus ministry, where now Pastor Rachel Bass is. Where were you before that?
Well, I served parishes in Wilmington, Illinois, and Philo, Illinois, and Aurora, Illinois. And before that, I was in several places in South Dakota, the first years of my ministry.
Where did you go to seminary?
I'm a graduate of Luther Seminary in St. Paul.
And college?
University of Minnesota in Minneapolis.
We're down to our last 60 seconds or so. Let me thank our guest, Pastor John Setterland, for staying up way past his bedtime. It's now 1 o'clock in the morning in the Bet Jala, and we thank you for speaking to us from the West Bank of Palestine. I'll let you hang up, and thanks again for doing this, and I'll tell our listeners a couple more things. Thank you, John.
Okay, good night, and thank you.
Thank you, John. Next week on Keeping the Faith, we'll be continuing our talk with interesting people here on the radio, and I seem to have misplaced my list of who's going to be here, but here we have it. We'll be talking with representatives from Red Bison. Mike Polito will be our guest on Easter Sunday. Josh Slocum, April 13. Norman Hubbard from the Navigators, April 20. Again, Tolstoy will be discussed with Rabbi Norman Klein and Elihu Smith and perhaps others. Elihu Smith is from the Prairie Zen Center. David Wilson will be a professor talking with us on inequality and gentrification on May 4. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm director of the University YMCA, where the international dinner is going on tonight in about 2 minutes. Thanks for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Box education is on the way out. Instead, imagine a future with schools of every variety available for mixing and matching. Micro schools, Waldorf schools, part-time schools, and more. That's the future seen by an advocate for de-schooling. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time on To the Best of Our Knowledge, learning outside the box. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 here on WILL Urbana. Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, mostly cloudy with a chance of flurries, the low in the lower 20s with light west winds. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high around 40 degrees and northwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly clear with a low in the mid-20s and light southwest winds.
WILL programs are funded in part by a grant from TK Service Center, 806 Perkins Road in Urbana, offering automotive repair on cars and trucks by ASE-certified technicians since 1984. A shuttle service for customers is also available on the web at tkservicecenter.com.